It's time for Lickin' on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, September 22nd, 2020. So glad to have you here with us. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. So excited. We've got joining us today our guest, Michael Jones, who's CFO of Thrive Mortgage. He is currently the chairman of the CMLA, Community Mortgage Lenders of America. He is also a telescope enthusiast, something Andy and Shell and I have in common. And so it's always fun to talk about that. He also wrote a book called Reset, and it's a great book that he wrote some time ago. And take a look at the link in the show notes. We had him as a guest in April 16th, 2018. And so good to have Michael Jones joining us a little bit later in the podcast. We are thrilled to be a part of the Industry Syndicate. Check out industrysyndicate.com. Also a part of mortgagemedia.com. Be sure to check out both of these great websites. And we're thrilled to have us being members of them and cross-promoting each other's podcasts. There's so much out there when it comes to podcasts that you can listen to, some great quality out there. And we're one of the few that are live. Everyone else seems to be doing the downloaded thing. And we're doing mostly live, and we're thrilled to be having that as an option. So anyway, we're going to be doing more on the way of video as we get further into it. But there's some complexity of how do we do this with both live streaming and adding video into the mix. So got to work through a little few more of the logistics, taking a little longer than I want, partly because we're all so busy in this industry. Thank our sponsors, again, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Be sure to go back and listen to last week's podcast where Marina Walsh gave us the latest numbers from the MBA and earnings. They're very attractive, very strong, and strongest ever. So go listen to that. Also, Finastra, Fusion Mortgage Bot Solution automatically addresses compliance issues. Great tool for enhancing borrower satisfaction and increasing productivity. We're all into increasing a little productivity. They've got some great solutions. Check it out at finastra.com. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative, both of these co-ops provide opportunities for you to network with other lenders and vendors and create competitive advantages. Some exciting things going on both of them. Also, CMLA, we have as our guest today, is a sponsor. Also, Indicom has solutions for every stage in the mortgage cycle. We had Linda on recently as a guest. Be sure to go back and listen to that podcast. That was about 3 weeks ago, I believe now. Incelerate is a company that helps lenders engage more effectively the borrowers and prospects, and as well as past customers. I love the past customers. We're not very good at that as an industry, engaging past customers. So Incelerate does a great job of doing it. Also, Ainsworth Advisors. Let's check it out, ainsworthadvisors.com. It is a website where you will see all of our advisors. It's a board of advisors service that I created this company some time ago. And more, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, Jenny Mae are saying, who is on your board as outside advisors? So check out that. We provide a solution to that need. Also, AI Assist. Using artificial intelligence to reach borrowers, and you can just connect with them in the most automated way. It's really wonderful. AI is becoming such a part of everything that's going on. So many podcasts and so many webinars coming up on that. Be sure to check it out. As also Celebrity Home Loans and Innovian. Love what Innovian does. It's a business intelligence tool by Ted Kramer and his team. They do a great job of analyzing and looking at the market data, optimizing your mortgage executions on the secondary side. You gotta check that one out. Also, Knowledge Coop and Mobility RE, Modex, Velma, VendorServe, Vidyard. Check out all of these on our website. A special thank you goes out to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Matt for their contributions each and every week. Let's get over to the MBA Mortgage Minute with this week's update from Rob Van Raphorst. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, the House Financial Services Committee held a hearing with FHFA Director Mark Calabria on the agency's response to the coronavirus pandemic. Director Calabria received bipartisan pushback regarding the imposition of a 50 basis point fee on GSE refinance loans. As a result of MBA advocacy, FHFA pushed the effective implementation date of the fee to December 1st, 2020. Members on the panel also probed Director Calabria on the regulator's recently proposed capital rule. Also, last Tuesday, MBA and several industry trade associations sent a letter to congressional leaders asking lawmakers to ensure that millions of Americans will continue to have access to flood insurance coverage through the National Flood Insurance Program. The NFIP's authorization is currently set to expire on September 30th, 2020, and the letter recommends that the program undergo several significant reforms designed to create long-term stability for policyholders. That's it for now. Thanks for joining me.
Good job, Rob. A lot of good information there. So I'm an avid podcast listener, Audible. I like consuming information, and you can select the rate at which you listen, whether it be YouTube videos, podcasts, or Audible, or a host of others, and you listen to it at an increased speed. You don't need to increase the speed with Rob. He speaks at a rapid rate, and I love it. I relate to it, quite frankly. Rob? Great job. Appreciate the partnership with the MBA. Be sure to sign up for Mortgage Action Alliance while you're at their website, or use your Play Store on your Android device or the App Store on your Apple devices to download that allows you to respond from your cell phone. Good to see so many people dialing in. We got a lot of people dialing in with their cell phones. Good to have Les Parker here with the TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by Power Seller, making hedging easy.
What does debt matter to you? When you've got a job to do, but you don't do it well. Fed's gotta give the poor zombies help. Few policymakers say let firms go bankrupt, yet their support with zombie-friendly rates interfere with the emergence of more productive competitors. The Fed sees no inflation above 2% for 3 years, largely due to excess debt. So, global central bankers continue to feed 20 to 30% of companies that can't make enough profits to cover debt payments. Zombie companies drag on world resources and keep finding money to devour worthlessly. No life, just debt. Or is it living death? Live and let die. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Yeah, good job, Les. I love how he and Gary Ketchum both collaborate on that segment. Such good stuff. By the way, sign up for Les Parker's newsletter. It's free to those of you who are listening to this podcast. And you can go to tmspotlight.com. Kind of clever how Les mixed in, because he also consults with us at Transformational Mortgage Solutions, or TMS. So anyway, clever how he did that. Les Parker's newsletter. Get it. Check it out. You will not be disappointed. And by the way, Les Parker said the sponsor that he has, which is Power Seller, wants to give full version of the sign up of the newsletter. And if you put in the code word power, the paid version at no cost. So good job, Les. Right, let's hear from Matt's report on what's going on in the markets. Matt?
This is Matt Graham with MBS Live Market Update. So recall last week we talked about the Federal Reserve, the new policy announcement being the big to-do coming up in the previous week. And even before that, we talked about how the Fed seemed to be laying the groundwork to say something new and different in this announcement. How did they do that? Specifically, at the end of August, we had two big events. They both happened on the same day. One was on the calendar. The other was unexpected. The calendar event was Jerome Powell's Jackson Hole speech, although it didn't occur in Jackson Hole this year due to COVID. It was delivered virtually. And the news media and analysts expected Powell to say something about the update to the Fed's inflation framework. That's basically their playbook that they use to justify and guide monetary policy decisions. And forever, seemingly, it has been 2%. In other words, the Fed is wanting inflation to stay stably at 2%, and they believe that will be, or that will yield, the best combination of price stability and economic growth. But they feel also that they learned a few lessons in the past, decade, about how Inflation has responded to inputs in monetary policy and unprecedented economic conditions following the financial crisis, as well as how the economy responds to changes in monetary policy with ongoing Fed bond buying, and have determined that they probably could have let inflation run a little bit hotter than they had. They also think that by not doing that, they may have shortchanged the economic recovery or price stability, and that has trickle-down effects, especially for those in a lower socioeconomic demographic, something they've been increasingly concerned about in recent years. So with COVID impacting that demographic, the Fed has made this shift, and they think that by letting inflation run hot, as high as maybe 2.5%, that they can offset the time that it was below 2%, and that it can average 2% over time. That much we basically took away from the updated inflation framework. Even the anticipation for it, all of those details were pretty well understood. Indeed, that's what Powell came out and talked about. But on the same day, Fed also updated its official policy document, updating the framework. And that was unexpected, and it made markets really wonder, why didn't they do this at the Fed meeting that was coming up 2.5 weeks later, aka last week's meeting? And the speculation included things like the Fed wants to unveil bigger stimulus or do something more interesting, more potent, and they are afraid that if they had just done that outright without the preface from the updated policy framework, that it might shock markets or might cause undue market volatility. Even for my own purposes or from my own standpoint, I felt like it was pretty much a given that the Fed was going to say something interesting last week. And as it turns out, they really didn't. They threaded the needle between saying nothing and saying just barely enough to satisfy the market's expectations. They did indeed change their forward guidance to reference more strongly this new inflation framework, saying that they could let inflation run above 2% for a time in order to average out to 2% in the longer run. But what they didn't do is increase any bond buying or change the maturity profile of the bonds they're buying. And that was a little bit of a letdown for the market, and we can see that in the response both in stocks and bonds, because remember, Fed stimulus is a rising tide that lifts both sides of the market. And since then, stocks have continued to sell off, probably aided by a little bit of a technical overbought condition that existed before all this, and that has benefited the bond market. Interestingly enough, the Fed also said that they would keep rates low or at zero, or they're forecasting that rates will remain at zero through the end of 2023, and that's as far out as their forecasts go right now. But there too, that was expected. Even more interestingly, their economic forecasts were upgraded somewhat significantly, both in terms of the unemployment rate and GDP growth. Maybe that reflects what they feel their new policy changes will do, or maybe it just acknowledges some of the positive changes that have taken place with respect to the post-coronavirus economy since June, which is the last time they updated these forecasts. Either way, the takeaway was that the Fed didn't deliver on the market's expectation. And that has, again, been a bigger deal for stocks. It may have been a big deal for bonds if stocks were actually not caring as much, because what we're seeing is that the bond market seemed a bit predisposed to weaken, aka to move toward higher rates, but has taken some solace or has soaked up some of the dollars running for cover from people selling stocks. And that's really the biggest thing that I'll be watching in the week ahead, to see what are bonds going to do if stocks manage to stage a bigger recovery. Are we simply locked in the same old sideways range that has dominated the bond market for months, or are we due for a breakout? Definitely watching the boundaries of that breakout. In terms of 10-year yields, that could be something as high as 0.79 or maybe a little bit lower at 0.73. And then on the lower end of the spectrum, the floors we're watching are more like 0.63 and 0.57. But until we break out of that range, really we're in a sideways grind, waiting to find out what happens with the economy and with the market as the coronavirus recovery continues. A lot of unknowns up in the air, and even the Fed will acknowledge that it all depends on how things go with the pushback against coronavirus. In terms of economic data, we had really nice homebuilder confidence last week. That was probably the highlight, record high. And then this week, we have more housing data coming down the pike. kicks off tomorrow with existing home sales, expected to top 6 million in terms of annual pace. And that would be stellar, to say the least. With us, as always, is the mortgage application numbers on Wednesday morning and new home sales on Thursday. In terms of scheduled events, not necessarily economic data, we do have Treasury auctions this week that can put a little bit of upward pressure on the bond market, on yields, until we get through that. But so far this week, we seem to be in pretty decent shape, thanks again to the stock market losses. So if those go away, we might see things get interesting. And if they don't get interesting after they go away, in other words, if bonds don't sell off after stocks manage to stage a recovery, it would speak very strongly to the ongoing sideways momentum for interest rates.
Yeah, good job. A lot of information in there, and I encourage you to check out the website, mbslive.net. Be sure to put in LOL, and you will get access to the system at no cost for an extended period of time. So check it out. Good job. Appreciate it. Let's get over to Alice Alvey. And we received her an update. It is pre-recorded today.
Thanks, Dave. Hi, everyone. I just want to give you a few tidbits on FHA Mortgagee Letter 2020-30. This is a long one and a little complicated because it's addressing how to handle a borrower who has been in forbearance and now wants to either purchase with an FHA or refinance. And probably our biggest questions are coming in with refinances, right? I'm in an FHA. When am I eligible to maybe take advantage of these lower rates right now if my borrower has a slightly older loan and wants to refinance? So we have a couple of buckets you've got to think about. There's no way in my report here that you can just go off of what I say. By the way, you need to read the mortgagee letter because it's got a lot of stuff in it that are little caveats. So as always, you have to be careful for when you have to manually downgrade. Those mortgage rules for when manual downgrade applies all are still into effect. So I'm going to give you the ones that you need to know off the top of your head. For starters, if I want to cash out refinance FHA and I've been in forbearance, I need to have 12 consecutive payments post forbearance before I'm eligible. There's no such thing as using an FHA cash out as a bailout from having skipped payments in forbearance. That's really one of the biggest things you all have to take away. The second thing is if I'm purchased and no cash out refi, those need at least 3 consecutive payments that are made post forbearance. So those are the simpler ones. Your streamlines get a little more complicated as FHA is trying to make sure that they complicate or make it easier. I said complicate. Yeah, sometimes you feel like they're trying to make it complicated. But in all cases, keep in mind, my borrower has to complete their forbearance plan on the subject property. What's good about getting into the simple refinances that they've made at least 3 consecutive payments within the month due since they've completed the forbearance plan. So that's really the main thing. When you get into your streamlines, now you've got to also be careful of your seasoning requirements and whether or not the borrower has made any late payments during their forbearance period. So you do need to make sure that you spend some time reading the mortgagee letter for when there's been late payments and there's a non-credit or credit qualifying streamlines. That gets a little nuanced. But for straight up, make sure you keep in mind, cash out refinances got to be done post forbearance, 12 payments on time, and purchase and no cash out, your general rule is going to be at least 3 consecutive payments post forbearance. Take time to read that mortgagee letter so you've got it all down pat, and maybe listen to your company guidelines as everyone tries to get to the bottom of this to be able to help out those borrowers coming out of forbearance. Thanks, Dave. Back to you.
Thank you, Alice. So good. She just got that sent to us. She got pulled into a meeting, so she pulled that together so quickly. So anyway, good job, Alice. Thank you so much for sending that in. Alice Alvey, before we got on the podcast, she did dial in and just let us know that she couldn't make it. But we were talking, and it's one of the things I want to give a shout out to Union Home. That does a spectacular job. We all know how competitive this market is, how everyone is stealing from someone else's company on underwriters and ops people that they need, or virtually across the board, all the people they need. And what Union Home has done is they've done a great job of doing an intern program and drawing new entrants into the industry and their home going. So Alice Alvey and I and Andy and our regulars were talking before when she dialed in and she said, I used this one. I said, it's like everyone else is stealing from someone else's garden. You guys are eating from your own. She says, yeah, the problem with stealing from someone else's garden, it always comes with weeds. So yeah, it's so true. Grow your own people. Watch what Union Home does. They're leaders in the industry for a number of reasons. That's one of the reasons I'm a big fan of what Bill Cosgrove, Al, and Alice are doing there. Let's get over to our good friend, Alan Pollack. He's dialed in with an update on what's going on in the world of technology. What you got, friend?
Good afternoon, Mr. Licken. So many good things going on. There was the Digital Mortgage Conference last week, the virtual event. I actually wound up being on nonstop meetings, as we always say, back to back, and never made it. And what's funny is I haven't heard from enough people, David, about the conference and how many people did or didn't go. But prior to this conference, every call I'm on, every few times a week, people are suggesting that conferences, one, people feel like, one, paying too much money, and yeah, two, it's really not the same as an in-person conference, and it's a lot of networking is what you get in person. The vendor floors have been quiet the last few conferences, and the virtual event is it's different, and I'm not sure how many people do or don't like it. I think it'll take us some time to figure that out. But for those of you that did go to digital, if you have feedback and you want to share it with us, please do. You know how to reach us, alan@tms-advisors.com. It'd be great to hear your feedback. So a couple things in the news. The first one is TikTok. All of our kids, our nieces, our nephews. Dave, I bet you have a TikTok account where you're dancing and singing to the tunes.
Reminds me of how uncoordinated I am. Is every time I go try one of those nails, they make it look so simple.
Yeah, Trump was very bullish on this. Right now, it looks like U.S. officials have expressed their concern. There's 100 million Americans that use the app, 100 million Americans. So there's going to be a new company now. It looks like it's probably going to pass. It's going to be called TikTok Global. As we know, it's ByteDance, China's ByteDance that owns TikTok. They'll be headquartered in the U.S., possibly Texas. Oracle will take a 12.5% stake in the new company, as well as, you ready for it, Walmart will take a 7.5%. Yeah. Yep, and they've agreed to make 25,000 new jobs at this TikTok, which was initially 1,000. And Trump had initially called upon companies such as Oracle and Walmart to pay the United States a fee to participate in the TikTok deal, said there were going to also be $5 billion U.S. educational fund. Very interesting to see how this thing closes up. But if you think about 100 million Americans, probably all very young Americans on TikTok, it's just going to be crazy. So let's move into mortgage news, right? That's where things are really shaken up. By the way, mortgage tech firm Docutech has become first American Docutech. If you remember back in February, there was a $350 million acquisition. So that has now been finalized. There's a company called Volley. What caught my eye on Volley? One is they closed $11 million in a Series B growth equity round. And to me, I think $11 million is hard to get. So I think that if you're a tech firm and you're in the mortgage space, what's that, David?
It's almost because the amount of $11 million is too small. People want larger sums. So the private equity firms I talked to all want 25, 30 million.
Yeah, 11 million goes fast, by the way. But anyways, what really caught my eye here is just because I was a co-founder of Nilex and Optimal Blue, one of the founders, the co-founders, Larry Huff, and we were always friendly fire, right? Anyways, Larry Huff is the executive chairman of Volley and Jerry Albrook, which we all know. And so it caught my eye, $11 million, Series B. Remember, they do CRM, automated marketing collateral, borrower journey, campaign management, portfolio retention, POS. They've got a lot of great technology. Their name's been in the news quite a bit. If it's something you're interested in hearing about because you like the folks that are in the organization or you've been looking at Volley, go take a look.
The Huff is back.
Yeah, the Huff is back. So digital mortgage virtual, I mentioned it earlier, a couple quick points. One of them, and I got this from one article, I think one of them was at National Mortgage News or maybe another one, very interesting point. A couple things. More and more customers want the one-stop shop. And that came from Blend, by the way. I agree with it 1,000,000,000%, especially from my time at Fiserv and dealing with the banks and credit unions and online banking and that experience that financial institutions are looking for. Blend has gotten into deposit accounts and HELOCs and other things. We've got to be focused on this. And if we're a technology partner, we got to be focused on partnering. Customers are going to want the one-stop shop. It's true. So that was one theme. Another one is now is the time to make the technology investments before you're too far behind. We've been saying that forever. So you've got to make sure that you're making the right technology investment, though. You can't just make any. And I think we've also learned that. Technology doesn't have a racial bias. We know that. Now, some people are saying that AI and facial recognition does, but technology in general doesn't. But we know we can't be all tech. We need human interaction. AI does help lenders meet higher demands. And then also, this was big, Bob Walters, president and COO of Quicken Loans, he was the keynote or the opening speaker. He had a lot to say, but basically he said that they are looking to leverage Amazon for Quicken's advancement and growth. And he's made a couple key points. He said that instead of a 30-day process, it should be a 5-day process, maybe even a 24-hour process. That's where technology will take us. There is no reason it can't be done in 24 hours. So, right, again, like I've said a couple times, there's things we've all heard before, right? Remember mortgage in a box that we've all heard like that?
Yep.
But that is true. We are going to get there. Yeah, I don't know what time frame. We've got a lot of obstacles still to overcome. I saw an article today, David, something about how the COVID created the rise in remote online notarization and digital closings, but there's still a lot of hurdles to overcome to really make it a full reality. E-notes are still not a thing yet. They're not enough of a thing. Even though Fannie will tell you that they're buying more and more e-notes, but they're only buying them from a select number of sellers. Also, David, I wanted to end on this. The financial brand, we talked about them a little bit last week, but this is so important. Remember last week, I talked a little bit about low tech and being human in the conversation and being part of the transaction. I just talked about that a moment ago. Financial brand did another survey. They found that Gen Z says they're eager to use big techs for banking, but will they? And it says 9 out of 10, so 90% of Gen Z respondents would consider obtaining a bank account from a non-bank company. More than half, 53% of consumers overall would also do. So when you look at the Gen Z population alone, separate than all consumers, 90% of them don't care if it's a financial institution or not. That means that everything that we do today is about experience, relationship, trust, brand. There's a lot to it. All the things that we focus on, right? Two points that I'll leave you with. They say people are complicated. And because of that, you can't put people in boxes. So they're going to need analysis and they're going to need a human touch. And second is financial institutions to take a balanced approach in digital transformation. So keep that in mind. Of course, we're highly focused on CRMs, on the point of sale, on the back end, even loan officers, right? Your loan officers are still your clients. They're your customers, and they have to also be treated with the same respect and the same kind of tools and such. So anyways, that's it for today, David. Back to you.
Good job. Thank you so much. A lot of information there. I was thinking about you as I downloaded iOS 14 and now has a dot on there that pops up. I like this. My wife says, why is there an orange dot that's on my phone? Then every time I get a phone call, it says, because it's using your audio device. And so I said, it's supposed to turn green when an app is using your video. That way you can see if people are spying on you or using your camera or using your microphone to listen to you. So it's really a new device. Check it out. I downloaded that and it works. So we did a FaceTime.
Yeah, the biggest thing, I don't know for anyone in iOS 13, if you didn't use shortcuts, but you can now use shortcuts in iOS 14. And now they could be on the main screen. Once you learn how to create a shortcut and your app uses them, it's like putting artificial intelligence into your phone, and you can't live without them. And that will tie into our mortgage industry as well. I can almost guarantee it. So yeah, iOS 14, take a look at shortcuts.
Yeah. I mean, that's a major release. I love this. I love 14. Andy Shell's always saying, Dave, you go too quickly to these new things. We don't know what's not working, not what's broken on it.
Yep.
So anyway, thank you so much, Alan. Appreciate it very much. And let's get over to the Dr. Andy Shell, the Profit Doctor. Andy, good to have you here.
So I got two quick topics. Yep. I know we're running late for the live version. First off, in 2 weeks, my 5-week mortgage accounting webinar starts again. Woo-hoo. Last session, we had 400 attendees on the webinar. Lots of interest in this topic. People want to learn about accounting because you got to know your bottom line. So if you want to sign up for the webinar, go to the mba.org/education, search for accounting. You'll find 5 webinars over a 6-week period. If you are a member of the Mortgage Bankers Association, you know how much it costs? It's free, absolutely free. No reason to not know mortgage accounting. I don't see how a business owner can survive today without knowing mortgage accounting. And I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit with Michael. So for today, here's the thing on my mind. So over the weekend, I happened to look through a couple of my favorite books. My two favorite books are Slouching Toward Gomorrah by Robert Bork, where he exposes egalitarianism, and Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. It's hard sometimes. The Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds by Charles McKay. Great book. It identifies a lot of really interesting times in history when there has been unwarranted value assigned to an item. Like, for example, during the crash, during 2007, who in the world would think that a subprime loan with a 60% DTI, 580 FICO, 98% LTV would be worth 106?
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you look back on that and you go, we were delusional. And that's what McKay talks about, this extraordinary popular delusion. That was one of them. Yeah, so when this happens, what we have is we have market value diverges from intrinsic value. Everything, particularly within a generated cash flow, has intrinsic value. And when the market value is different, that becomes what we call an asymmetric value change. One changes differently or faster than the other. Even one can go up and one can go down. We saw that this March when MSR values fell to zero, but we know there's future cash flow. So there we had a market value that was different than the intrinsic value, because the intrinsic value of the MSR was based on future cash flows and probably was 70 basis points, but the market said it was worth 10. So my point here is, how does this sort of event apply today or soon? And here's what I'm going to predict. We'll see if you agree with me, Dave. I'm going to predict that we're going to see this asymmetric change in intrinsic value, market value, very soon. And it's going to happen in 2021 when the refinance volume starts to drop. Marina talked about the MBA's prediction about the 60% drop in refi volume in 2021. When that happens, look what's going to happen. I'm going to predict that IMBs are going to chase volume and spend all their 2020 profit to attract new branches. So I'm going to call this branch wars. And this branch war is where the intrinsic value of the branch is ignored and the market value becomes the delusion, where people are willing to pay crazy money to get a branch. We saw this in 2018 during margin compression. So in 2021, I think we're going to see it again. So I think it's an ill-advised strategy, frankly. And if a branch is going to join you because you're going to pay them a bonus, what's going to happen when the bonus goes away and they're going to demand more payments? And how are you going to be able to pay when there's margin compression and you're not making as much money? So like you said, Dave, quoting Alice, it's better to grow your own. It's dangerous to steal from other people's gardens because you're going to end up with all the weeds. So I'm predicting this branch wars to come soon to a theater near you in 2021 as craziness happens and people chase volume. It happened before. It'll happen again.
I agree. History repeats itself in this industry, and sometimes stupid history repeats itself. In fact, we don't not learn. We just cannot learn. And we're intelligent. The mortgage lending industry is filled with really bright people, but why do we keep repeating the stupid parts of history? I don't know.
Humans over throughout history, all the way back to some of the examples of extraordinary popular delusions. Go back to the 15th century in Holland when they were assigning value to tulips. It was called the tulip bubble. So it happens. People are drawn to this and they get excited by it and they pay more. But anyway, IMBs are really bad at it. Hopefully they'll listen to people like you and me and Michael Jones, a CPA. CPAs rarely make these kind of mistakes, but it's good to listen.
Yeah. As if the CPAs, CFOs aren't always the most heard people. So anyway, you and I got to get to barbecue. I always love sitting and talking with you. We say we're going to have an agenda, but then we get together, everyone, and we have these kind of esoteric kind of conversations, and it's all over the map. It's so much fun. Good job. Andy Schell, good to have you here as always. Check him out. And everyone, come on, encourage him on. Send him an email, send him a text and say, Andy, when are you launching your podcast? He's there, 400 listeners, and a repeated. He's done this webinar how many times at the MBA? And now 400 people show up. Then it'll probably be 800. Now, who knows? So time to launch that podcast. You got a lot of wisdom to share. We need it. Appreciate you very much. Now, if you're listening on a downloaded basis, you just stay on and check out the next episode, because that's where we're going live. If you're listening live, don't change that dial. We're going right into our Hot Topic segment. Folks, I'm excited to have in today's Hot Topic Michael Jones, CFO of Thrive Mortgage. He's currently the chairman of the CMLA, which stands for the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. We're thrilled to have him here. And he's a fellow, a telescope enthusiast. Andy Schell and I both share that with him. I love that. And so are telescope people introverts? I'm not. Andy's not. Michael's not. And so he doesn't follow the typical CFO role. He's here to talk with us. And by the way, call attention to the guest appearance he had with us on April 16th, 2018. It's as applicable now. A lot of people go back and are still downloading that. It's called Get Reset. It's the book, Reset. It talks about what you can do as an LO. It's almost a parody. It's one that I really enjoyed reading. It's an easy read, but there's a lot of information in there. You got to check it out. could go on about it. But anyway, today we're talking about what's going on at the Community Mortgage Lenders of America. Massive changes going on in the industry. So we're thrilled to get a CMLA's perspective on what is happening. So good to have you here, my friend. Michael, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's an honor. One of the great companies in Austin, Texas here, in the great state of Texas, is Thrive. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about what is going on in the industry. Let's start with that. Massive changes. First of all, I think it'd be good to have our listening audience get a quick update on yourself and what's been going on there at Thrive.
Yeah, absolutely. When I came on, I guess it was 2 years ago, time flies, I was involved with CMLA and was just becoming the treasurer. Over the last couple of years, I've gotten a bit more involved in CMLA and took over the chair position this year. And it's been a very interesting year to be the head of the organization. There's been a lot going on. But just personally, we welcomed our daughter, who was born about 5 weeks ago. It was a unique experience with COVID to be in the hospital, but everything was good and we only had to spend a couple of days, so that's nice. And as an organization, Thrive has continued to grow. I think we had just done the name change last time we had spoken, and so we changed from Georgetown Mortgage to Thrive Mortgage. And over the years, as we grew outside of Georgetown and outside of Texas, we found that name just didn't really travel quite as well. There was a Georgetown in about 36 states, so we felt like a name change was needed so that we could better identify with ourselves.
Yeah, I love the name too. I couldn't believe it was available. Could not believe it. That's one of those ones you go like, you're kidding me. That's still available? It was reserved for you guys. That's special. Let's talk about what's going on at CMLA. You're the chairman of CMLA, and there's a lot going on. And love to get your perspective. And also, I love how you guys coordinate with the MBA. There's a good partnership there. But you also then diverge from time to time on policy. If you could talk about that divergence, crazily, but also, more importantly, how are you working with the MBA?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are a lot of opportunities for advocacy in the mortgage industry. So I do think it's important to identify that we don't ever want to go head to head against the MBA. I think the MBA does an excellent job advocating for mortgage bankers all across the country, and it also handles the voice for all the chatter available. And I think that's one of the unique challenges when it comes to the MBA is because they are representing wholesalers, they're representing correspondent investors, they're representing brokers in some instances, and they're even representing the independent mortgage bankers, of which we vary in size from a couple $100 million a year all the way to tens of billions a year. That's where I think CMLA has a unique opportunity to just fill in some of the areas that when you're painting with a broad brush, you can sometimes put too broad of a policy together, or you may miss some unique nuance that our group, CMLA, can come in and advocate for.
Yeah, I think you guys do a great job of that, too. And when I talked to the MBA, they said we considered a great partnership. And it wasn't always that way, but it really is now. And I'm thrilled under your leadership. Let's talk a little bit about some of the members at CMLA, why someone might, we're putting an ad for CMLA right at the front side. Why would someone want to become a member, and who's ideal to become members? You talked about size, production size. That's a pretty good wide range of people. Talk about that.
Yeah, and I'll talk about our story of how we got into CMLA. We were at the TMBA conference a few years ago, and Sean O'Neill, our warehouse representative for Texas Capital Bank, said, hey, we're having a dinner tonight. I think you guys would be a great fit to come to this dinner, learn about us, and just see what we're about. And internally, I thought, oh, Lord, we're going to join yet another organization. We're already members of MBA and TMBA and a number of other groups. But we went to dinner, and very glad that we did, because I had a wonderful dinner with our peers here in Texas. And I saw for the first time that even though in some cases we were competitors, we all wanted the same things at the end of the day. We wanted to make sure that our voices were heard. And so as I've gotten more involved in CMLA, as I've been able to go into fly-ins to Washington, D.C. when COVID's not happening, be able to sit in the same room and have a conversation with Richard Cordray and members of Congress and FHFA, you really get the sense that there's a unique opportunity to engage in advocacy on a smaller basis where you're able to go through those doors that sometimes aren't available whenever you're a member of a larger organization. We joined about 4 or 5 years ago, and extremely happy we did, because we learn a lot of things through our advocacy calls. that we have. And then we also learn a great deal when we fly into Washington, D.C. 1 to 2 times a year to speak with those that are making policy and writing regulations to make sure that they understand the implications of what they're doing.
Let's talk about some of those conversations, Michael, because when you're back there, what are you actually hearing from, what are you experiencing, is what the better word, as it relates to receptivity to the message? Is it like, yeah, I'll listen to you, get out of here as soon as you're done, don't let the door hit you in the butt on the way out as you're going, or is there real genuine interest? Do you ever get to meet with your senators? Is it only with the representative, whether it be a senator or a congressman? Do you get to meet with them in person? Do they show interest? What's the experience like?
Yeah, the sky is really the limit, and the more engaged you are, the more opportunities you have to get in front of those folks. But I think on the positive side, I've always walked away feeling better about the trip because folks genuinely have an interest in hearing. They genuinely have an interest in making sure that they get things right. And probably the biggest aha I've had from those discussions and from those trips is that many of the folks that are elected, they oftentimes aren't knowledgeable about some of these things that impact their constituents. And it really is an educational trip for the individuals that we meet with, sometimes within the agencies that regulate us, because they just don't know what life is like in the trenches. And so whenever you can go and educate them on that, they become better policymakers because they understand the full picture. So that's been a big takeaway for me.
That's a great point. These guys live inside the Beltway. They live inside of a bubble. They do not understand this. They regulate an industry that many of them have never worked in. That's not always the case, but talk about some of the issues that you're facing right now.
Yeah, it changes every year because the issues that we're tackling now weren't the issues we were tackling in March and April as this forbearance thing was coming about. And so, yeah, over the years, we've tackled things like flood insurance and how do we need to address that so that we don't price people out of homeownership. Specifically this year, we've tackled everything from forbearance to speaking directly with FHFA about how they're going to treat loans that go into forbearance after they purchase them or prior to. We made sure that they understood the impacts of not purchasing cash out loans or assessing a several hundred basis point hit to certain loan transactions and what that would mean to independent mortgage bankers who are writing these loans. And we did a virtual fly-in about a month ago, I guess it was maybe 2 months ago at this point, where we met with a number of those agencies in D.C. virtually, and we've turned our attention to CSBS, and they oversee NMLS, they oversee the state regulators that many of us get audited by. And so we're working on advocacy there specifically around remote work and the impact of whether or not we need to continue the licensing regulation up to this point, since we've all proven that we can work remote, we can work from home, and this need to have a physical footprint where we all operate. That may just be an old way of doing business that we need to revisit, which will bring the cost of business down for everybody and improve service.
I couldn't agree more. That's an important initiative. Let's get over, start with Andy and then Alan. Andy Schell being the profit doctor, CPA, CFO. Andy, why don't you get in and love to get your thoughts.
First off, hey, Michael, we got to connect. My kids went to Baylor, although I went to SMU. Love talking to CPAs. Look forward to getting together soon. So I've known your dad for a long time, and your prior name was very well regarded, and I love the new name as well. So as your role in CMLA sounds just fascinating, and your path in mortgage lending also is fascinating, having that you went to Baylor, graduated, became a CPA, worked for an international public accounting firm at PricewaterhouseCoopers in tax, no less, and then became an originator. That's just really an interesting transition. And then to go from years as an originator to the CFO position, how has that journey enhanced your ability to be effective as a CFO?
Yeah, I couldn't have done it any other way. As I was considering leaving public accounting and joining the family business, Roy, my father, was adamant that I wouldn't come into the back office and just immediately start taking over certain roles. He felt it was very important for me to go and originate and see what that felt like. And I can't tell you how invaluable that was. not only did I learn to originate and really enjoy it and carve out a niche for myself in the self-employed realm of borrowers, but in the back office, whenever I moved into the back office in 2015, I had an appreciation for making sure that we had all the programs available, that we were investing in tools that would help our LOs originate. And at the end of the day, if I have to make a loan level decision about whether we should close and fund a loan based on the guidelines, I can empathize with that loan officer whose stomach is going to be in knots and have to talk to that realtor or that borrower and either give them good news or bad news and that sense of urgency behind it. So it was invaluable to take the route that I did.
Well, that's amazing. I know, Dave, that's off topic for CMLA, but it's so interesting to hear about your background, Michael. How big is too big? Representing community mortgage lenders, what's the median size of the organizations and volume?
Yeah, we typically, and this has changed over the years, some of our original members have continued to grow, but we certainly have grown from whenever we joined. I would say a typical member is in the, say, $2 to $4 billion range. We certainly can have folks lower than that because they have a very valid voice and viewpoint. And we've even got some members that are in the $10 to $15 billion range because as you look at the sheer volume of what some of the largest lenders in the country do, you find very quickly that you need to have that advocacy. You need to have that unique voice to point out where there's cracks in the paint that need to be filled in. Really, I would say that there's nobody that's too big. There's nobody that's too small. It really is just, hey, if you feel like you want to have a very specific targeted voice, you should definitely reach out because we're always banding together and figuring out where we need to advocate.
That's good. Alan, good to have you on and joining us into the podcast. I'm real interested, Alan, in some of your questions you might have about technology and the utilization of it. Alan?
Oh, I've got a good one. First, thanks for being here. Appreciate your expertise and talking with our listeners. So my question's about tech, but I'm just sitting here thinking, like, what would some of our listeners be wanting me to ask? And it comes down to the cost of technology having to do with being competitive, being inside new markets, but also having to deal with COVID. Do you feel that you've had to increase your technology spend? Have you been able to keep it the same, but you've lowered the spend in other areas? Do you see a new balance on where you may have had to change your cost structure? Maybe you want to just chat a little bit about what you're seeing from your point of view with technology and the overall accounting of mortgage lending.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming into 2020, we as an organization and many of the members of CMLA had been moving towards using point of sales. Many had been fully ramped up and onboarded with that, which allows for consumers to self-serve more, feel like they're owning that transaction more. But it also takes a burden off of your operations and sales staff because they're not hunting down documents and trying to push them into the LOS. And so I think coming into 2020, a POS solution, game changer if you didn't have one. One of the things that Thrive Mortgage was uniquely tooled with was remote online notarization. So in 2016, we adopted eNotes, and over the years, we slogged along on our own and began closing more and more loans like that. And in 2018, we closed the first remote online notarized loan in the state of Texas, where the consumer doesn't have to leave their home. They can sit at their kitchen table and close a transaction. And that's allowed us to serve more consumers who are concerned about traveling. But even whenever there's not a worldwide pandemic going on, we consider that a bit of a lifestyle loan where our consumers can close at their own convenience and they don't have to get caught up in traffic. So I think 2020 and beyond, lenders that have not adopted a solution like that really need to think about it because the pace of change is about to accelerate a fair amount. As a number of large aggregators, Jennie Mae is now looking at eNotes. And so I think there's no better time than to take the profits that folks have made in 2020 and reinvest that into technology to make their sales team more efficient, to make sure that they're streamlining operations, because I think the next thing we all need to be looking at is AI, and we need to be looking at how do we bring this automation without losing the human touch, but to reduce our costs and provide an overall better consumer experience.
Some lenders and even community banks, to some degree, depending on your size, you've got either a group or your own team, or you just build a partner. Do you have an opinion on that at all?
I do, and I don't know if it's the right opinion, but it's mine. I personally think it makes more sense to buy. I've seen too many situations, both in our company and outside, where you can tie up dollars and just never-ending dollars in trying to develop something. And at the end of the day, we are really good at seeking out borrowers and really good at providing them a unique closing experience and having our own underwriting flavor. But I don't know about software development. And I think a lot of mortgage companies can get themselves into trouble if they're not willing to truly commit to becoming a software developer. And so they just end up either having to buy anyway, or they tie up so many resources that they can really hurt themselves in the long term with a solution that doesn't work. So I'm personally in favor of buying.
I think that is the general consensus of many of the industry, although we just picked up a client this last week in Southern California, and they opted to build their own. And I asked him, would you do it again? He goes, absolutely, because we're in control of it. But he says, I tell you, whatever, it's like building a custom house. He says, whatever the price is, in this case, double it. Just double it. That's what my experience was when we built our own. And so had a little bit of journey in that. But boy, I think that for the vast majority of them, I would agree with you 100%. We'll wrap it up with this last question. What do you see are the primary issues at CMLA that everyone should be paying attention to?
Probably three that I think about and that we're really trying to make sure we have conversations that are starting now and making sure we're getting in front of the right people. The first one is the Supreme Court ruling on the constitutionality of the structure of the CFPB. I think right. As we head into a very volatile political climate and post-election, that role is going to change one way or another. And we just want to make sure that plenty of people have heard all sides of the argument as they look to restructure that. So that's one of the priorities. Another one is that the CFPB has thankfully put out advance notice on what's going to go on with changes to QM. I think it's great that they're considering this. Some of the early proposal and some of the points that have been brought up by the MBA and others are very valid. And so that's going to be a huge impact to the industry. And we should not lose sight of the fact that part of the reason why we've all enjoyed a robust recovery from the 08 crisis is because a lot of these rules have stayed the same in terms of QM lending and Fannie and Freddie getting to set some of the tone and VA and FHA. And so this is a big deal that this is changing. And then the final one is our work with the CSBS. We're very early on in this work, but working with the regulator that deals with NMLS and the fact that many of us are multi-state, even if we don't have a large footprint there, means that we're all subject to audit and costs and overhead. And I think a revamping of how the independent mortgage banker is regulated and reviewed is very important, because we spend a lot of, in my opinion, unnecessary funds in over-regulation that if it was just retooled a bit and the CSBS and the CFPB worked together, we could get audited, say, once a year, and those findings could be shared with all states that are interested in viewing them, versus all of us having to go through state audits, sometimes two, three, four at a time, and they're all looking at the same information and coming to the same conclusions. So that's the work that CMLA is focused on.
Good job. Appreciate you for many reasons, you and your family. You run a great company. I mean, it's one of the better run companies. I love so many things that you have done. You've been leaders in the industry for a long time. But one of the hallmarks of leadership is giving back, and you taking time, Michael, during, especially during this year, strange year that it is, with all of its complexities and busyness, you've taken time out to give back to this industry through CMLA. And I'm really pleased and just want to honor you for doing that. I think it's something that is never easy to do, but you have, and I want to say thank you on behalf of all the CMLA members and on behalf of our industry, all that you do. Thank you. Appreciate you. And also thank you for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been a great year to work with CMLA. Can't thank the board enough of CMLA. They offer a lot of help and resources, and it's going to be a great rest of the year. And we're looking forward to advocacy in 2021.
Good. I'd love to be a part of that. Appreciate it. Our special guest has been Michael Jones of Thrive Mortgage, also chairman of CMLA, one of our sponsors. Folks, been so good to have you here with us this week. Next week, our guest will be Brent Emler of Velma. Brent has got so many ideas on how to market, where to go with things. And he's got some new things he's going to be talking about, some trends that he sees going on. Very excited to have Brent Emler of Velma coming on next week. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, CMLA, top of the list, with Michael being our guest today, as well as Finastra, as well as Indicom, Accelerate, Ainsworth Advisors, Mobility RE, and Modex, and a host of others. Check them all out on Lickin' On Lending website. Under sponsors, they offer some great services. We appreciate their sponsorship to make this podcast possible. Thank you, everyone. Have a great week and look forward to having you back next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.